I actually would like an answer. Yes or no?
Well, I'm not going to give you a yes or no. I think it's far more complicated than that. As I've already said, my answer is I'll defer that judgment to history.
An excerpt from Chuck Hagel's hesitation marathon, all-day confirmation hearings before the Senate Armed Services Committee that impressed almost nobody of either party, Hagel being grilled in that instance by John McCain. With Hagel, immigration, guns, and the looming sequestration budget cuts at the end of this month, February will be a short but action-packed month in national politics. With us now, CNN's new chief Washington correspondent, also about to get his own show from what I read, Jake Tapper, who has been here many times before as ABC chief White House correspondent and backup anchor on ABC this week. Hi, Jake, and congratulations on the new gig.
Thanks, Brian. It's great to be here. I don't think you're going to be able to tell a discernible change, but you'll have to let me know if you do.
You still sound like you. I'll say that. And I want to ask you about your new job in CNN in a few minutes. Like, will your main goal be never to be mocked on The Daily Show? But let's talk Chuck Hagel and some of the news first. How bad was that on Thursday, and is there any chance the White House will pull the plug?
I don't think there's any chance the White House is going to pull the plug, but it was pretty bad. It was, even administration officials will acknowledge, it was a bad performance by former Senator Hagel, at times confoundingly bad. He had to have known and that he was going to face tough questions, and I suppose some of the difficulty he had was that he was trying to be deferential in many ways, while also not recanting previous beliefs. But at times he seemed confused. At times he seemed to not understand. There were some misstatements, obviously, when it came to the containment strategy, which there is no containment strategy when it comes to Iran, obviously. But, I personally cannot remember a worse confirmation hearing for a cabinet official. Maybe you or some of your listeners can, but I still think ultimately the odds are he will be confirmed.
And by way of contrast, after Hillary Clinton was so masterful in her all-day hearings on Benghazi, along comes Hagel and fumfers through without the sense of conviction or vision that Clinton showed about America's place in the world. Do you think it's just less necessary for a defense secretary than a secretary of state?
No, I don't at all. I think it first of all, probably shows to a degree how out of practice he is. You saw John Kerry masterfully confirmed with his he came across as charming and flattering of the committee members. Here's a former Republican senator who had been a colleague with many of these, many of his inquisitors. And it was tough. I think there are a number of things going on. First of all, he hasn't done this for a while. Second of all, I think he's just probably not as strong when it comes to testifying as some of his predecessors.
Would you say that what makes Hagel so attractive to President Obama, the reason he's there in the first place, the reason Obama is willing to put up with this bad performance and all this criticism, is Hagel's deep reluctance to use the military as a skeptic on war in Iraq, in Iran, and other places? Is that what fits in so well with President Barack Obama?
I think they have similar views of the U.S. I think that they have similar views of how U.S. power should be wielded, if ever. And I think, by the way, that President Obama's views have evolved. And in his first term, he was far more likely to be deferential to the generals, to Defense Secretary Gates.
Petraeus.
General Petraeus. I think that it's entirely possible.
Even Hillary Clinton, by the way, in that hawk camp, right?
Yeah. And I think that President Obama has through firsthand experience, whether in Afghanistan or Libya or elsewhere, come to the conclusion that there are limits to U.S. force and it should be implemented sparingly. And he and former Senator Hagel are, in what is called the realist camp of the use of military power. This is, the camp that George H.W. Bush was in and Brent Scowcroft was in, and I think they view the world that way. I also think there's something that President Obama, he, first of all, he likes him personally. They were friends and colleagues in the Senate together. They traveled through the Middle East together in 2008 when Senator Obama went on his world tour. I think also there's something attractive about, A, him being a Republican, Hagel, and, B, him being, he would be the first enlisted man to be head of the Pentagon, having served as a sergeant in Vietnam, an infantry sergeant. So I think those are attractive to him as well.
Although, you know, I wonder about the narrative that many Democrats are using to support Hagel's nomination, just the two things you brought up, that it's important that a former fighter in Vietnam become Secretary of Defense for the first time. I guess anybody who served on the front lines becoming Secretary of Defense for the first time. But I could just as easily argue that from a Democrat's point of view, one thing that makes our country great is the constitutional structure of civilian control of the military, not military decision-making by a military class. I think this is something Democrats tend to say, especially during Republican administrations. So
right.
All these Democrats glorifying the soldier becoming the policymaker, I mean, it's not their traditional position.
That's exactly right. And, you know, you certainly didn't hear those same Democrats talking about how important it was for decorated war veteran John McCain to be commander-in-chief in 2008. It is something that and it's not just Democrats, it's Republicans as well, wield when it serves their purposes and then ignore when it doesn't serve their purposes.
So Hagel's,
we have a tradition of civilian control of the military, and military service is not required.
So Hagel's Vietnam War experience and his past Republicanism are just political props, like the photo of Obama shooting Skeet?
I didn't say that. I'm saying that they are nice things that are not necessarily required. I mean, certainly a Republican who does not enjoy much Republican support has his limits as a bipartisan symbol. I mean, John Kerry, I think, I mean, this is a prediction, but John Kerry will have gotten more Republican Senate support for his confirmation than former Republican Senator Chuck Hagel. I think that's fair to predict.
Probably a pretty safe prediction.
Yeah, and in terms of combat service, generally speaking, look, I like it as somebody who wrote about soldiers and spent a lot of time with soldiers over the last few years for the book I wrote about Afghanistan, but which is not to say I like Hagel one way or the other, but I like the idea of somebody who has served being in that role. But generally speaking, it's not required, and it doesn't necessarily make you a better leader. It might make you, in some ways, more gun shy. I mean, one could make the argument
that could make one a better leader.
Yeah, literally gun-shy. One could make the argument that in order to be commander-in-chief or secretary of defense, you have to make very cold decisions, about people's lives. And one could also make the argument that perhaps if you've been touched by violence, whether Senator Kerry or Senator Hagel or anyone, that maybe you don't necessarily have the ability to make such cold decisions. Again, I'm not making these arguments, but
right.
I'm just saying
right.
This is something that people, when they're talking about this, this is one angle.
Or you have more of an ability than a so-called chicken hawk like Dick Cheney, who never served, to know what actual war actually is. And I guess that's what we may find out with two Vietnam vets in those top positions.
100% I agree with you. And look, the fact is that I heard on NPR last week somebody interviewed the author of this great Vietnam book, The Things They Carried, and he was very enthusiastic about it and thought we should have people who know the precious treasure that is American combat soldiers and has respect for that. And even if that means that they are overly cautious, then God bless. Mm-hmm. And that's a perfectly valid suggestion as well.
Jake Tapper, CNN's new chief Washington correspondent and soon-to-be anchor. And next topic, here is a Super Bowl commercial that jumped into the political fray, bought by Mayor Bloomberg's group, Mayors Against Illegal Guns, that uses NRA leader Wayne LaPierre's own words against him. This is Wayne LaPierre on universal background checks in 1999.
We think it's reasonable to provide mandatory instant criminal background checks for every sale at every gun show. No loopholes anywhere for anyone.
I don't think he said it with the piano accompaniment in that congressional hearing.
He was actually
hearing.
Playing the piano, I thought.
It's a great talent that he has. But seriously, I watched most of the game, but didn't see that commercial. Did it run in New York? Did it only run in Washington?
I saw it. It might have only run in Washington, D.C. I definitely saw it.
And does that commercial suggest that despite all the talk of assault weapons and large magazine bans, the universal background checks are really the prize that the president and Bloomberg are after?
It's interesting. No, it is probably what they are most able to achieve. Of everything that is on the table, it seems likely. This is after talking to people in the White House, talking to Republican aides on Capitol Hill. I think an assault weapons ban, so-called assault weapons ban, the ban on different types of semi-automatic rifles, almost certainly cannot pass the House, and probably cannot pass the Senate. The ban on high-capacity magazines, probably the same thing. Certainly will have difficulty in the House. Background checks, I think there is more possibility that could pass. We should note that the NRA has a different position on universal background checks now than they did in 1999 after Columbine. And they now oppose it and say there are all sorts of reasons why the instant and universal background check system does not work, including states not providing mental health information. But I do think that of all the possibilities we've heard and everything discussed, and President Obama will speak about this later today in Minnesota,
yes.
Background checks is probably the area that there is more likely to be some sort of achievement legislatively.
By the way, I recommend to everyone Chris Wallace's takedown of Wayne LaPierre on Fox News Sunday yesterday. You won't believe it's Fox, the way Wallace went after him and insulted him and everything. So did you happen to catch that? And is the NRA going to emerge from this whole thing a marginalized, fringy organization compared to how they went in, if that's how they're being treated on Fox News Sunday?
Well, I will defend Chris Wallace to a degree and say that, you know, I think he's a fairly fair inquisitor. The issue at hand was LaPierre's, the NRA's web ad that basically talked about how Sasha and Malia have protection at their school. Why don't your children have protection at their school? And Chris Wallace, first of all, pointing out not only is it particularly bad form to talk about the first daughters in that way, but also the idea that the first daughters are just the same as everybody else's kids when it comes to how much protection they need is ludicrous.
Right, and Chris Wallace pointed out that his own kids went to the same private school that Sasha and Malia go to, and there were no armed guards. So the whole premise of the ad was incorrect.
Well, this is part of a NRA meme, which is that all the elites in Washington and New York who want to take away your guns and deny you the ability to have armed guards in your schools all have that for themselves right. And for their children, and that, but they don't want you
right.
to have it.
But I come back to my political question, which is, do you think that the NRA is going to emerge from this whole process, even though they've gathered 250,000 more members? They have about 4 million, but there are like 50 million gun owners in America. Are they going to emerge from this process a more fringy group with less influence over Congress than they had before? Any way to gauge it?
The short answer is I don't know, but the way to find out is to watch what happens with those Republicans in swing districts. The NRA is strong in places where the NRA is strong, North Carolina, Indiana, most of Pennsylvania, and they will continue to be that way. It is important to note that their power has been waning for quite some time, and most of the candidates that they supported last election cycle did not win. They did not have a very good election cycle. I think it was even worse than Karl Rove's election cycle, American Crossroads, in terms of rate of return, how many candidates won versus how much money spent. I think this is going to be a very tough issue for Democrats in red states like Kay Hagan, the Democratic senator from North Carolina, who will probably be pressured to vote for some of these gun control measures, and ultimately that might be contrary to mm-hmm. her electoral interests. And I think it's going to be a tough issue for Republicans in some House districts in terms of what mom support. Look, these gun control measures that President Obama will talk about today enjoy very wide popular support
in the polls.
That's not the question. The question is, do they enjoy support in Congress?
Right. Jake Tapper, CNN's new chief Washington correspondent. We have a few minutes left, so on the lighter side a little bit, because I know you're also a person in the world, and you can tell that from your Twitter feed. Did you, besides the Bloomberg commercial, did you have any other picks or pans among the Super Bowl ads? I saw the Church of Scientology bought a strange spot, and Chrysler tried a few so-so knockoffs of their own Clint Eastwood Halftime in America ad from last year. Anything catch your eye?
The gun control one was interesting, and there were the farmer one, the Dodge, you know, and the Paul Harvey ad, and God Made a Farmer. I thought that was an interesting ad.
I was surprised they used Paul Harvey. I mean, you almost have to be 75 to have had a sense of who Paul Harvey was.
I saw somebody on Twitter made the observation. I forget who it was, but this is not original. Somebody said the thing that the American farmer and Dodge have in common is that both are subsidized by the taxpayer.
And I thought Beyonce was a lot of fun. But Alicia,
very bootylicious, extremely bootylicious.
Indeed. And maybe it was all the electricity they consumed that knocked out the power. I still have that.
That was just crazy, right? I mean, it was embarrassing, but it's one of these things that, look, it's New Orleans. I mean, anybody who's been down to New Orleans can't be surprised by the fact that the lights went out.
So Beyonce was a lot of fun, but Alicia Keys' slow ballad of the national anthem was riveting, I thought. I was absolutely getting chills.
And the kids from Sandy Hook, I mean, that was very moving as well. And then obviously, just a shout out to my peeps in Baltimore. I mean, it was close, but it was a win. We'll take the W on that. I mean, that was a good game. It was very interesting, though, because, you know, the spread was 3.5 points. So the fact that Baltimore won by 3 points was made a big difference to a lot of people last night.
I guess so. So, all right, enough about the fate of humanity. Let's talk about your career in our last few minutes. Are you getting your own show on CNN? Do I hear correctly?
Yes, I will be getting my own show.
What's it going to be like?
The goal is to make a news show that is, you know, has a wide range of topics, from breaking political news and breaking international news to sports and entertainment and business. And it will probably launch at 4 o'clock and might move to a different time eventually, but it will launch at 4.
Wolf Blitzer. Because Situation Room starts at 4 now, right?
Right. Well, Wolf's show is a 2-hour show, and then he's been asked to fill in, and he's been doing 3 hours. And Wolf is, you know, the Energizer Bunny, so you could put him on 24 hours.
I know. I think this is good for Blitzer's health, really, because he's on the air so much. I think that they actually have a fleet of Wolf Blitzer robots that they maintain, or he's going to have a heart attack.
I think he's pretty fit. So anyway, I'll have the hour right before him, I think. And then, you know, we're staffing up right now and just trying to, like, do a fun, interesting news show. The issue with CNN is that, you know, everybody turns on CNN when there's breaking news. But the issue is, well, what if there's not breaking news? The numbers aren't as high. And so the point is, the effort is to try to make more appointment television on CNN. And Jeff Zucker, the new president, is, you know, he's psyched to give it a whirl, as am I. The hope is to do a new show at 4 o'clock that will be agenda setting and that, you know, everybody who does the 6:30 broadcasts will watch to see what we're up to. And we'll be like the very, very best of the very best media that's out there, your show included.
And thank you. But all this buzz, and I don't want to put you in the position of speaking for, you know, the suits who really make these decisions, but all this buzz about CNN reducing its political presence, Mary Madeline and James Carville out, from what I read, maybe Donna Brazile too, maybe less politics overall under Zucker, who's, you know, famous for producing the Today Show.
Well, you'd have to talk to Jeff, right? But the bottom line is, I think that anybody who watches, you know, great news shows on television, reads the New York Times, listens to NPR and its affiliated shows, knows that there is a great bit of news that is fascinating and interesting and important that is not politics, right? I mean, if you, I know that when I listen to your show, when I listen to Marketplace, when I listen to all sorts of amazing national public radio shows, you guys are not only talking about the sequester, you're talking about everything. You and I just talked about Super Bowl ads. So news, you know, and you pick up the front page of the New York Times, and there's a sports story, there's a business story, there's an international story. When you, you know, when you pick up the New Yorker just did like a 10,000-word profile of Kid Rock. The point is, there's a lot of really interesting stuff to do as long as you do, as long as you cover it in a smart way that can be appealing to viewers. And so whatever direction Jeff Zucker wants to go in, I think the idea that there's a wide range of topics that we can all cover, and you guys at NPR already know this. You already do this.
Making
very successfully.
Using NPR to make the case where the new CNN, their new anchor-in-chief Washington correspondent, Jake Tapper. Seriously, good luck over there. I look forward to continuing to talk to you.
Of course. Anytime, Brian. Nice talking to you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up next. Happy 100th birthday, Rosa Parks. Jean Theo Harris on how history misunderstands that night on the bus.